SBS Audio is supported by advertising.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from. The Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to. From the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yaman, welcome to NITV Radio. Bertrand Tungandami Ngaya. I am Bertrand Tungandami. Coming up in your program this Monday, the 29th of July, we have current affairs stories from a First Nations perspective brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. We also have a yarn with the Gamilaroi woman Claire Jacques Vasquez, who is one of 72 finalists in the 2024 NATSIA Awards, Australia's longest running and most prestigious art award of its kind, presented on Larrakia country. In today's program, we also explore Crossroads Reflections, a new film that will be released today, a film that's about truth, change and hope for Indigenous communities in Western New South Wales. But first, the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, new ministers sworn in as Anthony Albanese reshuffles his front bench with Senator Malandiri McCarthy as Minister of Indigenous Australians. Venezuelans in Australia say they are being dissuaded from voting. And in skateboarding, heartbreak for Chloe Covell as she finishes 8th in the women's final at the Paris Olympics. Labor's new cabinet has been sworn in following several changes to the front branch as Anthony Albanese prepares for the next federal election. Malandiri McCarthy has taken on the Indigenous Australians portfolio, taking over from Linda Burney, who will retire at the next election. Tony Burke is now Immigration and Home Affairs Minister, with Andrew Giles moving to Skills and Training and Claire O'Neill moving to the Housing portfolio. The Healing Foundation has welcomed Senator Malandiri McCarthy's elevation to cabinet, arguing she will bring nuanced understanding and lived experience to the many priorities of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities in her new role. Governor-General Sammy Mostyn oversaw proceedings for the first time since taking up the role of Governor-General. Young children with cystic fibrosis in Australia will have access to life-changing medication for a fraction of the price. Trikafta, which costs about $150,000 a year without subsidies, will now cost less than $400 a year for now, children aged 2 to 5 years old, following an expansion of its listing on the Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme. The medication improves lungs function and has been available previously on the PBS for older age groups. Health Minister Mark Butler says the expansion will deliver significant benefits.
this will have a huge impact on those families. It will allow families to get the benefits of Trikafta earlier than otherwise would be the case, instead of waiting till the child's sixth birthday. And because this disease is progressive, the earlier you're able to get the life-changing impacts of this Trikafta drug, the better their lifelong chances are going to be.
Addressing the biannual New South Wales Labor Conference, Premier Chris Minns says major plans are underway to protect workers and build the skill base in the state. Mr. Minns says convenience cannot come at the expense of workers' rights, announcing plans to improve protection for rideshare drivers and food delivery workers. Legislation to be introduced by the end of 2024 will target minimum pay and conditions for those workers. Mr. Minns also announced a $152 million injection for local councils to employ 1,300 more apprentices and trainees.
With that in mind, this state needs a plan to lift up young Australians and give them the best start to their working lives. Under the last government, the number of people finishing apprenticeships or traineeships halved in New South Wales. I don't think there's any doubt that we're letting down young people, and it's clearly hurting our skilled labour force and affecting the economy. So something needs to change, and it needs to change urgently. Today I can announce we're prepared to do something about it.
Reforms in Western Australia will come into effect today, limiting rental increases to once every 12 months. The change brings Western Australia in line with most other states and territories. The WA government says the measure will help renters assess affordability and plan their budgets. The new laws will also allow tenants to keep pets and make small modifications to properties. Polls have closed in Venezuela in what's being described as the most consequential election in a quarter century of Socialist Party rule. President Nicolas Maduro is running against Edmundo González, a 74-year-old former diplomat known for his calm demeanor. Mr. Maduro's 2018 re-election is considered fraudulent by the United States, among other countries. The incumbent has warned of a bloodbath if he loses. Venezuelans in Australia need to travel to their embassy in Canberra in order to vote. Brisbane-based Gabriel Mijares Vasquez told SBS Spanish the process was costly and time-consuming. He says he was the only person in his close circle of Venezuelan friends who was able to register.
It's strange because the rules that tell you how to register are not clear. The embassy gave us a month to register, but they did not provide any information. They did not send out any media releases.
In Victoria, a mother who forced her 20-year-old daughter to marry a man who later murdered her has been sentenced to 3 years in jail. Sakina Muhammad Jain will be released on a recognizance order after 12 months and faces deportation to Afghanistan once out of custody. It's Australia's first conviction of a forced marriage. Jain forced her daughter, Rukia, to marry Muhammad Al-Halimi in 2019. Her daughter was divorced and considered by the Hazara community as having lost her value. Mr. Halimi killed his bride months later. He is currently serving a life prison term for her murder. In the Middle East, Israel's army has ordered Palestinians to evacuate parts of the Buraj refugee camp and Shuhaida neighborhood in central Gaza. It told evacuees to head for Muasi in the Israeli-designated humanitarian zone in the far southwest of the Strip. Earlier this weekend, though, parts of Muasi were also evacuated due to a planned strike on Khan Yunis. The United Nations Agency for Palestinians, UNRWA, says only 14% of Gaza isn't under Israeli evacuation orders. Abu Omar, one of those displaced, says the situation is desperate.
Find a solution for us. Enough. Where do we go? They destroyed our homes. They killed our children. They displaced our women and men. Where do we go? Enough. Where do we go?
The United States has blamed Lebanon-based Hezbollah for a rocket attack in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights that killed 12 children and teenagers on a soccer pitch. Israel also claims Hezbollah is responsible and has launched several airstrikes on targets in Lebanon after the attack, raising the threat of a wider war in the Middle East. Hezbollah, in a rare move, is denying responsibility for the attack, with Axios reporting the group claims it was an Israeli anti-rocket interceptor that is to blame. Ibrahim Safati is a resident of Majd al-Shams.
It's shocking. Some people are still in denial, some people are in shock, some people are dealing with it by throwing blames at politicians and all of that. And media people and media try, everybody try to spin it as they want it to be spun.
The Israeli army says they have targeted Hezbollah weapons depots and combat infrastructure in response to the Golan Heights attack. Israeli forces also bombed a school in central Gaza, killing at least 30 Palestinians, including 15 children, on Saturday. And with just 100 days left until the United States presidential election, campaigning is ramping up. Vice President Kamala Harris's campaign says it has raised over $300 million and signed up 170,000 new volunteers in the week since she became the Democratic Party's presumptive candidate. The latest polls show Ms. Harris and Republican candidate Donald Trump essentially tied, setting the stage for a close-fought campaign. Republicans have been attacking Ms. Harris for her record on the border. Mr. Trump's running mate J.D. Vance described her as a radical.
She got a little bit of a bump from her introduction, but look, the people are going to learn her record. They're going to learn that she's a radical, but they're going to learn that she's basically a San Francisco liberal who wants to take San Francisco policies to the entire country. And I don't think that's going to sell in Minnesota. I don't think it's going to sell anywhere else.
Olympic triathlon swim training has been cancelled in Paris due to concerns over poor water quality in the River Seine. Persistent rain in recent days has raised pollution levels in the river, which could affect triathlon and marathon swimming events. Organizers spent more than 1 billion euros to improve water quality ahead of the 2024 Olympic Games and recently lifted a near 100-year ban on swimming in the river. If the water quality does not improve in time, organizers say the triathlon could change into a bike run duathlon and the marathon swimming event could be moved to the rowing venue. But Benjamin Regnault, head of water department for the city of Paris, says he feels positive it won't have to come to that.
The data shows that from the beginning of July, 80% of the time, 80% of the days, the Seine was swimmable. That means the level of bacteria was so low that we were under the level required to make it swimmable. The issue we have to deal with, we had a pretty rainy spring, a pretty cold and rainy summer, so it makes it more difficult. But with the sun coming back, we are fully confident that we will get back to a situation where the Seine is fully clean and fully swimmable.
Australia's second youngest athlete at the Paris Olympic Games has missed out on a medal in street skateboarding. 14-year-old Chloe Covell failed to land any tricks in the final after qualifying in fourth place. She finished eighth overall. Japan's Koko Yoshizawa won gold with a total score of 272.75, beating compatriot Lisa Kama's 265.95. And now having a look at the weather around the country. Broome, sunny, 32. Perth, showers easing, 20 degrees. Adelaide, mostly sunny, 15. Melbourne, shower 2, 13. Hobart, partly cloudy, 11. Albury, Wodonga, sunny, 13. Canberra, mostly sunny, 11. Wollongong, a shower 2 and wind easing, 15 degrees. Sydney, a shower 2, 16. Adelaide, also a shower 2 and a top of 17. Brisbane, sunny day, 21 degrees. Townsville, partly cloudy, 24. Cairns, similar conditions, 26. Alice Springs, sunny, 18. Darwin, mostly sunny, 32. And the Torres Strait Islands, partly cloudy day ahead and a top of 28 degrees. And that is NITV Radio News.
TV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online.
I am Bertrand Tungandame and you're listening to NITV Radio coming to you from Nam on the Kulin Nation this Monday afternoon. Still to come in your program, we caught up with a proud Cameroon woman, Claire Jacques Vasquez, one of 72 finalists in the 2024 NATSIA Awards, Australia's longest running and most prestigious award of its kind, presented on Larrakia country. The program was Avayan with Toby Finlayson, giving us some insights into Crossroads Reflections, a new film that's being released today. And the film is about truth, change and hope for Indigenous communities in Western New South Wales. But first, some current affairs stories brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. A collection of Aboriginal cultural artefacts from a museum in California has been returned to their rightful owners, the Wiradjuri people of Tennant Creek in the Northern Territory. Years in the making, the handbag involved First Nations elders from both Australia and the United States. Marcella Senalonga has the details.
A haunting traditional welcome from another land. Ancient tools and weapons of war in a museum a world away, reunited with their rightful owners.
You guys are one hell of a awesome team. Wiradjuri people pass on their thank you and gratitude to the Fowler Museum. A special thank you to Axis for all your hard work.
In the 1960s, the Fowler Museum of UCLA in California received many of the objects from the family of a private collector. Wiradjuri elders say the objects were taken when the Stuart Highway was pushed through Australia's centre.
We had objects that got taken from my grandfather or my uncles where we were too close to the road, the Stuart Highway. I feel really great in doing this, coming over and grabbing these objects is taking it back to country.
It's taken 3 years of hard work by the museum, traditional owners and the Australian Institute of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. The advocacy of Native American elders crucial to its success.
And despite progress, there's a long way to go, as we're in the midst of a long-term effort to humanize Indigenous people, restore our place of respect in our own homelands, and heal deep intergenerational wounds brought on by this violent colonization.
The objects will be temporarily held in Canberra before returning home to an arts centre in Tennant Creek. Marcella Sinalunga, NITV News.
Heading to Cairns now, where a city that has been considered for a very long time as the gateway to Australia's tropical north. But this city has also had a very strong and vibrant Indigenous community. And after an historic election earlier this year, Cairns has had its first Indigenous councillor, a local icon of both the airwaves and the water waves. Dan Rennie met the recently elected councillor.
Around these parts, he's known as the Murray from the Curry, or Trendy Trev. Trevor Tim runs cultural tours.
Very good morning, you Daily Mob.
Hosts National Talk Black on BBM Cairns and is a motivational speaker. And now he's navigating the world of politics after being elected to Cairns Regional Council.
As a councillor, colour wasn't a thing. Outside colour, I can do the job. I'm happy to be here.
The Wanyi and Gungalinda man, who also has roots to Arab Island, is the first Indigenous person to hold the position in Gimoy. From the piers of the harbour to his peers in the chambers, wading into the uncharted waters of local council politics. You're known as Trendy Trev, the Murray from the Curry, the jovial, fun character that everyone knows and loves. How do you separate that from Trevor Tim, the councillor, or do you?
It is the same person, and the other hat I wear as a motivational speaker, I have a desire to inspire, and the message I deliver is about loving that person in the mirror. And I speak of that to a lot of students, black and white, and a lot of business people. As I share the stage, whoever's in the audience, the message is for you. is have a relation with that person in the mirror, that man in the mirror, that woman in the mirror. So I practice what I preach in that sense.
First 100 days down, what does the next 100 look like for Councillor and Trevor Tim?
So we are leading from the front. And so we need to lead from the front in all aspects, all First Nation operations, acknowledgement, employment, education, all the above. So there's black conversations at the table with Cairns Regional Council. Don't worry about that, yes.
From the airwaves to the waterways. And now, looking to get council shipshape for the journey ahead. A pioneer of black politics in Gimoy. Dan Rennie, NITV News.
NOLA program also reported last week that Australia's indigenous population has surpassed 1 million people. Figures from the Australian Bureau of Statistics show there was an increase of more than 56,000 First Nations people since June 2021. Buruloo, Perth is projected to have the fastest growing population, followed by Mingin, Brisbane. While the indigenous population is growing, birth rates for the wider Australian population are falling. A study by KPMG found the number of births in 2020-2023 is at its lowest level since 2006, falling by 4.6% year on year. And that's all for current affairs stories from an indigenous perspective brought to us by NITV's NOLA program. We must step aside for a short break. But stay tuned, because when we come back, we have a conversation with Claire Jacques Vasquez, a proud Gameroi woman finalist in the 2024 Natia Awards.
Visit sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
And that was King of Disappointment by James Casadelli. Coming up next, we have a conversation with Claire Jacques Vasquez. She's an emerging First Nations artist who masterfully weaves her heritage and personal narratives into her art. And she's one of the finalists in the 2024 Natia Awards. Leading up to these awards, I caught up with Claire to learn more about her art practice and her entry into these awards.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
I'm joined by Claire Jacques Vasquez, one of the finalists in this year's Telstra National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Art Awards, Natias, which are Australia's longest running and most prestigious art awards of their kind, presented on Larrakia Country by the Museum and Art Gallery of the Northern Territory and principal partner Telstra. Claire, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to NITV Radio.
Oh, Yama, thank you so much for having me.
Yama, actually, I should have greeted you in Gamilaroi language, Yama. Let's give it a few words, and I like using Yama to greet. And so you're of Gamilaroi descent, I believe.
Yes, and I'm joining you today. I'm actually up in Yindigi country, beautiful, incredible tropical North Queensland. I'm actually up in the Cairns Indigenous Art Fair exhibiting opening tomorrow with Umbrella Studio Contemporary Arts. I'm a long way from home at the moment, but I'm absolutely loving Yindigi country. Such a beautiful and special place up here.
Talking about home, your entry in the awards is Take Me Home. Can you tell us about this piece you entered, this art you entered in the awards, and what's the inspiration behind this entry, Take Me Home?
Oh, great question. So my artwork, Take Me Home, it's one of my favourite works I've done to date, and at the core of my artist practice, I love to share and really celebrate memories that I have growing up for half of my childhood on Gomeroi Kamilaroi country with my mum and also my grandmother. Did get a little bit crazy with three strong, resilient women under the one roof. But something that I hold so dear is my grandmother's woven bag she used to take with her absolutely everywhere. And in my artworks, I like to have this reference linking back to my grandmother's bag. So the work home, there's two layers on that particular artwork. The top layer, it's quite a textural layer, that's reminiscent of the woven techniques used in her bag. And the under layer, it's a landscape of Gomeroi Kimilaroi country. It's such an incredible place. There's so much beauty, so many stories. And I really wanted to capture something that offers a glimpse into my grandmother and the country that flowed through her soul and bags, her soul and veins. And I think her bag, it became a threshold to the beyond. It was really a vessel that it was holding a gateway to the surreal, and it almost became like a portal between two worlds. This little vessel that held the weight of the world, containing a lot of her memories and her maps as well, and moments from her childhood.
I saw on your website that you weave through painting. Is this one of those pieces where you weave through painting?
I was very fortunate in high school that I had an incredible high school art teacher, and he really let me play and experiment with a whole bunch of different mediums, particularly in the form of paint. So I was able to actually come up with a whole new way of using paint. I think like in a modern context, when artists paint, we open up a tube of paint, we get that canvas off on an easel, and then within a space of a minute, that paint's already on a canvas. I really like the idea of slowing down the process, getting to know the medium a lot more on a more intimate level. And I've discovered that there's a whole bunch of amazing things that we can do with paint if we slow down and get to know it a little bit better. So a lot of that is captured in my artist practice, what I do now. It is quite time lengthy to do the artworks, but again, I'm really invested in that slow process and working with the mediums at a really gentle pace.
How do you feel your work reflects the themes of strength, culture and connection to country, which are highlighted in this year's awards?
I really loved this year's theme, and I was really drawn to enter enter the awards this year. I didn't enter last year. I didn't feel like I was ready to enter, but this year in particular, I think the showcasing of my grandmother and her story, you know, she was just born on country. She thrived on country and she struggled on country. And she was able to raise my mum and my uncle and also me for half of my childhood on country. But that definitely that gentle, resilient connection to what it's like growing up on our home country, that's definitely something that has meant the world to me. And I think our grandmothers, they are strong women. They, in particular, my grandmother, she fought a battle on a different front. It was a very different time in our shared history back then. And her weapon of choice that she would navigate a really challenging moment in our shared history was with her bag. It was her thing that she held that was hers, that no one could take away from her. And it travelled across so many different environments, from rural to town environments. Over the decades, I think her woven bag I saw a lot and also celebrated a lot too.
And as one of the 21 emerging artists in the first 5 years of their practice, how has your journey in the art world been so far?
It's been a pretty incredible one. I've gotten to take my mum and family to some amazing places. I've met some incredible elders at different exhibitions and in community. And I think I've been very lucky that I've been able to connect with a whole bunch of amazing colleagues and like-minded peers that are really genuinely supporting my journey. I've got a lot to learn, but I'm really excited for what a lot of artists like myself in the contemporary First Nations art space are doing and forging forward to still capture and share our stories and our history.
Maybe a question that should have been the very first one, but I still have to ask it, though we are almost at the end of the conversation.
That's okay.
What does being a finalist in the 2024 Telstra Natia mean to you personally and professionally?
Oh, gosh, I'm so incredibly excited to have my work sitting next to some incredible elders and superstar First Nations artists that I've looked up to for quite a few years and I really humbly admire. So to have my work exhibited in the same space, I'm really humbled and I'm really touched by that. I'm really excited to travel up there for the exhibition opening event, and I can just imagine what the energy is going to feel like on Larrakia country to have my feet on the soil. I'm really excited for that. But I guess I think I've been really inspired by the powerful works over the years. And I think the most celebrated thing is it's an opportunity to be part of history. But I think the awards are in their 41st year. And what an incredible legacy and supportive environment. This legacy with this award was started before I was born, and the path was forged with First Nations artists that were struggling and dealing with a lot back then. So to be able to walk in the footprints of what some of our most recognised and celebrated First Nations artists have done, that's a really special moment and something that I'm really proud of.
What impact do you hope your work will have on those who see it at the museum and at Gallery of the Northern Territory exhibition?
I'd like for people to have an emotional response for my particular work. Although my works appear delicate, they evoke a sense of, fragility and vulnerability. And when people view my work, it's really funny. This is like a dance that starts to begin. Their hands kind of instinctively rise. They kind of long to touch and connect. However, there's guidelines for how we interact with art. And I wanted to evoke a sense of vulnerability and struggle against these natural instincts. And in a way, mirror that emotional response to show what restrictions imposed on my family during their time out on the mission was like. But most of all, I'd like it to encourage other younger Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander artists to capture their moments from their own personal journeys. I think it's now more than ever, it's so unbelievably important that we talk about what's been happening in these last three generations. So I really hope that it provides a space where younger artists can say, hey, I've had a really great upbringing, or I've got a story that I think the world really needs to hear about, and for them to jump on board and share their stories and their art.
Before I let you go, I'm just opening the mic to you for any other thing you'd like to share with us.
Well, I'm currently in Unity country up in North Queensland. I'm exhibiting with the incredible Umbrella Studio of Contemporary Arts. And in our booth, we have Annie Susan Peters and Annie Gail Marbo. So I'm very touched that I've got these incredible, very well-known, amazing, gentle, nurturing artists alongside me. And I've also got a really exciting commission coming up for James Cook University, and exciting group exhibition titled Spotlight with Vivian Anderson Gallery in NAM coming up in August. There are a few other things in the works, and I'm really excited to tell the world all about that when the time's right.
Claire Jacques-Vasquez, congratulations on being nominated as one of the finalists in one of Australia's most prestigious arts awards, and thanks again for joining us on ITV Radio today.
Thank you. It was lovely chatting with you.
Time for another break. When we come back, NITV Radio's Sharka Pekova will be in conversation with Toby Finlayson, Creative Director of P Media. They'll explore P Media's Crossroads Reflections, a new documentary about truth, change and hope for Indigenous communities in Western New South Wales. As you'll hear, these communities were beset with youth crime, but the documentary Crossroads seeks to change the narrative, giving young people voice to speak for themselves.
NITV Radio, share our stories on Facebook.
We got these traumas, we've been trying to heal this pain. They tried to break us, they can never take away this pain. The system trying to cage us.
documentary film production Crossroads Reflections is to be released on July 29th. Crossroads tells a story of truth, change and hope for Indigenous communities in Western New South Wales. The film is set in towns Moree and Bourke that have been in the spotlight as being part of the youth crime epidemic in the Western region. The project by Desert P Media seeks to change the narrative and give young people voice to speak for themselves. We are now joined by Toby Finlayson, creative director and co-founder of DPM. Toby is joining us on NITV Radio to tell us more about the Crossroads documentary film production. Hello, Toby, and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Let's talk about Crossroads. So can you tell us a bit more about this project?
Yeah, so the Crossroads project came about with funding from Create New South Wales, from New South Wales government throughout 2023. It was basically, Desert P Media has been running projects in Western New South Wales, community media projects for over 20 years now, 22 years this year. And Crossroads is a really interesting new project model, very exciting kind of new way of working in community, much more sort of long-term foundation building program. So we spent a lot of time doing skills development and training and mentoring with young participants from other projects that we've done out there over the years. And yeah, it was incredible. Had like employment pathways, and you know, young people from the project are employed at the schools. It spanned 12 months, and there was a series of different types of engagements, from sort of songwriting and filmmaking projects to cultural exchange projects between the two communities of Bourke and Moree. So focusing on leadership and health and well-being, and we took kids from each community out to their neighbouring community and did sort of cultural knowledge exchange, which was amazing, and did like large-scale sort of theatre film events at the end of the year. So it's a pretty holistic and very exciting new sort of way of working for Desert P Media.
Mm. And so the Crossroads is a film about this whole project?
Yeah, Crossroads Reflections is kind of, as the title would suggest, it's a bit of a reflection piece on the project and how it went. We engaged an independent research agency and evaluators from Melbourne to come along, and we did a tour out to the communities and interviewed, you know, elders and young people and participants and families and service providers about the project and the social impact of the project. So some of the film sort of includes some of those interviews that sit alongside a description of the project and how it went and what some of the social impacts were. It's a very moving, really interesting little piece of media.
Mm. And the production, as you mentioned before, was set in Bourke and Moree. Why those two towns specifically?
Desert P Media's had a long-standing relationship with those two communities particularly. Back in 2016, we did a series of projects over a couple of years in Bourke. One of them won a National Indigenous Music Award and had some high sort of media profile as the B-Town Warriors. And so we went back to that community because we had, you know, really strong relationships with young people and community members and services in the high school, and we had good engagement for the project. And then the same in Moree. Our co-founder, Maddie Priestley, and current chairperson is a Gomori man from Moree. And so, yeah, similar sort of situation in terms of community relationships and potential for engagement.
Mm-hmm. And who are the participants?
Yeah, well, lots of the participants were ex-participants from our projects at the high school, especially in Bourke. So they were ex-B-Town Warriors members, basically, all the OG crew that used to be in the high school and were participants in our projects and now have finished school and are looking for a bit more sort of robust opportunities and some more, you know, skills and development and opportunities for employment, et cetera, et cetera.
My name's Lorraine Dutton. Born in Broken Hill, raised in Bourke. I started music when I was a kid. I don't know, it just grew on me, and I just want to be a role model for all the kids in town.
And the same in Moree. It was, you know, young adults sort of finished or finishing high school and are looking for, you know, a bit of inspiration, some sort of wind in their sails, some new skills and networks and confidence.
My name's Mika. I'm from Moree, on Gilroy Land. I'm 18. It's just more about, like, me learning new things, stepping out of my comfort zone, and kind of just getting that, like, open mind and thinking outside of the box. And I've learned a lot so far.
It's all based on the principle of willingness. So it's all around, you know, young people that want to be a part of it and want to learn and grow and develop their creative practice.
Mm. And what's their situation at the moment? Do they have access to the creative industry?
As part of the program, we created these community media kits, which are sort of laptops and cameras and audio devices and a whole bunch of different kind of digital media production equipment, and that we left those in both communities. And we've still got young participants are still employed at the local high school in Bourke doing sort of creative projects with current students. And there's young people that have started photography businesses. We're about to roll out a new kind of long-term mentoring program, and some of those participants are going to come and be part of that as well. So, yeah, there's a lot of momentum and a lot of really, really amazing, unexpected social impacts and opportunities and pathways for the participants.
Mm, that's amazing. This situation there was quite hard for young people. There was the youth or so-called youth crime epidemic. So what was it? What were the problems that the people are facing there?
Well, I think part of it is, and what we heard a lot from the community members when we were out there, is that, you know, Aboriginal people in regional communities, not only in New South Wales but all over Australia, don't really get the opportunity to tell their story using their own voice.
My name is Laquita Taylor. Yeah, I've been singing for a long time, and I thought, you know, I want to voice my concerns and get on the song. And, you know, us as Aboriginal people in this certain community, we've always been painted the wrong picture. And I guess I'm excited for all of us to paint us the right way that we want you to see us.
They often have their story told for them by mainstream media, and you know, that sensationalist media often focuses on the negative stuff. There are obviously social issues in remote communities, as there are in all communities. There's also a lot of really positive, really amazing work being done in Indigenous communities in Australia, and especially in Western New South Wales. Yeah, I think for lots of people, that story about becoming role models and supporting young people that are kind of going down the wrong track and building frameworks and foundation around those young people that are there to be positive role models in their community. That's the solution. Community-led solutions and community-led program design are the, you know, it's something that Aboriginal people have been talking about for a long, long time, and, you know, hopefully we're heading in the right direction.
Hmm. And so what are the next plans? What are the next steps?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, we just opened a new program called DPM Futures, which is a six-month paid mentoring program for young participants that have been involved in our projects in New South Wales over the last 20 years. So it's open to anyone who's had a connection with Desert Pea Media since early 2000s, anywhere in New South Wales. And we're going to do a big camp up here in Bundjalung country, following the same kind of vein of digital media skills development, storytelling skills development networks. And it's really about supporting young creatives. And we're actually going to pay young people to be mentored and to push their creative development in whatever field they choose. It's very self-determined, self-directed mentoring program. It's very exciting. Expressions of interest are open now. So if anyone out there is interested in throwing their hat in the ring, then you can find the EOIs on the Desert Pea Media website.
And going back to Crossroads, where can we watch this documentary?
The film will be released on Monday morning at 10 a.m. and it's going to be on all of our Desert Pea Media social media platforms, on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Toby, thank you so much for joining us on NITV Radio to talk about Crossroads Reflections.
Thank you.
Maury Madness getting ready to go. When I speak my truth, I got that sunshine glow. From the bush to the beach where my sunlines flow. Got my Roy Dung, daddy, if you know, then you know. That's what a brother do. Spreading that mood, bro. Get me on the dance floor. We could have a dance off, do it all night. Feeling all juiced up, getting my groove on. Set it up super, we could take a flight. Alright, I said, ooh, you got me feeling myself.
Now put it on you.
And that's all we have on NITV Radio today. I'm Bertrand Tungandame, thanking you for your company this Monday afternoon, and leaving you with a Cool as Hell by Baker Boy.
You make me feel this type of way.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.